It's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And it's Thursday, March 26th, 2015. I'm Uncle Dennis, and we're at a recording from a secret location somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And I do want to remind you to have a pencil and paper handy, because you might want to take some notes, some email addresses, web pages, something you might want to recall later on. So let's get started with announcements. Coming up this weekend is the 2015 Humboldt State University Women's Environmental Conference, Women at the Forefront of Struggle for Environmental and Social Justice. This conference was created by Yurok Elder and Actionist Jean McCovey and is supported by California Women's Agenda, United Students of Humboldt, HSU Multicultural Center, and various departments. It's free and open to the public. Come hear women who fight for the land, air, water, creatures, and people threatened by mismanagement, corporate greed, and climate change. And it will be March 27th. There will be a native forum at the Bowman Forum. 4 p.m. will kick off the Women's Environmental Conference. And at 8 to 8:30, the Extreme Northwest California Coast movie premiere of Sky is the Roof American Indian Film Festival 2013. Saturday, the program continues at Nelson Hall at Humboldt State University, starting at 11 a.m. And on Sunday, continues at the Bowman Forum, starting at 10 a.m. Once again, Humboldt State University's Women's Environmental Conference, March 27th through March 29th, is the 2015 Oregon Wilderness Conference, Stand By Your Land. Join Oregon wild supporters, scientists, authors, outdoor businesses, and more for the 2015 Oregon Wilderness Conference, Stand By Your Land. Things will kick off on Friday, May 15th, with a wilderness-inspired block party, Northwest 13th and Wild, taking place at the Keene Footwear headquarters. Join us for live music, games, food, and ale, all in celebration of Oregon's wild places. The family-friendly event is free and open to the public for free beer and wine to those who have a conference pass and available for purchase for those who don't. Saturday, May 16th features a full day of wide-ranging panels, workshops, and speakers discussing critical wildlands, wildlife, and water issues in Oregon and beyond. Starting the day on the right foot, we'll be joined by our keynote speaker, distinguished author, and tireless conservation warrior, Kenneth Brower. Registration is required for Saturday events, but lunch is included. Register by April 30th, and you'll receive a free Oregon Wilderness Conference t-shirt. To sign up, go to the webpage www.oregonwild.org. Once again, that's the Oregon Wilderness Conference, May 15th and 16th in Eugene, Oregon. One of the largest timber sales in U.S. history is in the proposal stage. The Klamath National Forest is proposing one of the largest timber sales in U.S. history. Over 30,000 acres of post-fire habitat are at risk of elimination. These steep and rugged watersheds support the most productive wild salmon and steelhead fisheries outside of Alaska, the largest acreage of unprotected low-elevation ancient wild forest remaining on the West Coast, a high concentration of wild and scenic rivers, and are world-renowned for their rich biodiversity with many rare and endemic native species. The recently released draft environmental impact statement contains multiple action alternatives. However, none of them are ecologically sound. The project proposes to log between 100 and 200 million board feet from 6,800 acres in larger forest stands, 650 miles of roads equaling 2,500 acres, and another 3,000 acres on ridgetops or outside of private property. The project also proposes to reopen decommissioned roads as well as create 22.5 miles of new roads that require at least 14 new stream crossings. Nearly half of the treatment area is within mature forest reserves, which were designated to protect and enhance mature forest ecosystems that serve as habitat for old-growth-dependent species. A vast amount of the project is within the critical habitat for the northern spotted owl and would remove over 1,000 acres of habitat. Other rare species such as martin, fisher, and the endemic Siskiyou Mountain salamander are in danger. Visual quality and fisheries on six wild and scenic rivers are threatened, as well as key watersheds deemed vital for salmon survival and critical habitat for coho salmon. The project would negatively affect six different inventoried roadless areas, which are vitally important because they are the last large tracts of unroaded wildlands outside of wilderness. The Westside Project considers logging in three distinct fire areas but fails to analyze them separately. The Beaver Fire area is north of the town of Scott Bar near the Oregon border in Northern California. Here the public land is intermixed with forests long abused by industrial timber management. In fact, the entire area has been logged and replanted since 1955. The Happy Camp Fire area on the Klamath River contains one of the most important wildlife corridors in the North Coast, the Gritter Creek watershed, which is threatened by the proposed project. The White's Fire on the wild and scenic North Fork of the Salmon River burned within and adjacent to the Russian Wilderness. The entire watershed has been impacted by 2 years of fire suppression, and multiple timber sales. The Salmon River watershed is a stronghold for the last remaining viable run of spring Chinook salmon. The project would multiply the damage already incurred by last summer's fires and fire suppression, which cost taxpayers $195 million. Nearly 200 miles of ridgelines were bulldozed to bare earth, leaving behind swaths of clear cuts and huge amounts of slash. Hundreds of thousands of gallons of fire retardant coat the entire ridgelines, and the heavy use of roads and fire effects caused severe sedimentation into salmon-bearing creeks. Comments on the recently released draft environmental impact statement are due April 13th. Because vital wildlife information has not been released but is referenced in the document, the Environmental Protection Information Center is asking for an extension on public comment. Please tell the Klamath National Forest that the ecological costs of the West Side Project are too high. Our forests have higher than monetary value. Our communities, wildlife, and watersheds deserve better. Voice your opposition and share your concerns. There will be a public meeting hosted by the Klamath National Forest on Tuesday, April 7th at 5:30 at the Six Rivers headquarters by the Bayshore Mall, and I believe that is in Eureka, California. Well, if for more information, please go to wildcalifornia.org. That's wildcalifornia.org. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. They are asking you to take action to change the law. Everyone, not just Montana residents, can help defeat the anti-bison bill, HB 194, in the Montana chambers by asking Montana Governor Steve Bullock to defeat it with his veto power. HB 194 is another attempt by livestock interests to block the restoration of wild bison in Montana. Go to the webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org for more information on HB 194. Senate Bill 284, also in the Montana legislature, takes state wildlife authority away and subjects it to county commissioners' control by requiring their approval before buffalo could be released or relocated in Montana. Wildlife in Montana belong not to the state, not any one person or interest group, but to future generations who are the beneficiaries of the public trust. Unfortunately, comments only by Montana residents. Please call the legislature at 406-444-4800. Once again, that's 406-444-4800. Buffalo Field Campaign is in need of summer volunteers. Come and join the Buffalo Field Campaign this summer as they work to spread the word to save the herds. They are now accepting volunteer applications for their summer outreach program, which begins on June 15th and goes until Labor Day weekend. The goal is to spend July and August tabling and sharing information with Yellowstone visitors inside the park about the issues surrounding the buffalo. They are asking for a 2-week minimum commitment from anyone interested in helping. To apply, go to the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign and fill out their volunteer application and email it to the Buffalo Field Campaign. If you have any questions, give them a call at area code 406-646-0070 or visit the website www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign can be reached at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Once again, that's Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. The phone number, 406-646-0070. The webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And Big River Mendocino Old Growth Redwoods, a home of ancient giants, has been saved from logging and development. Thousands of Save the Redwoods members like you pitched in to protect the Big River Mendocino Old Growth Redwoods from logging and developing, allowing the league to purchase the property by the March deadline. Less than a mile from the Pacific Ocean and the popular vacation town of Mendocino, the property is a rare example of two forest types in one magnificent location, a pygmy forest and an ancient redwood forest. This land also features a tributary of the Big River, which runs to the ocean. Protecting this forest has been a Save the Redwoods League priority since the mid-1990s, according to our science-based master plan for the Redwoods. When the property went up for sale in October of 2014, the league launched a campaign to raise the $1.4 million purchase price. This property has captured the public's imagination, said Sam Hodder, Save the Redwoods League President and Chief Executive Officer. The forest supporters love its strange, wonderful, and rare pygmy forest and ancient redwood giants and its potential for trails so close to the Mendocino. For more than 4,600 members contributed to the campaign. Mendocino area resident Susan Jewell made a generous donation to help the league buy this forest. This property means so much to me, she says, because these beautiful old-growth redwoods are right in our backyard. It's fantastic to pass by the ocean and smell the sea air, to travel a few minutes and be in the beautiful redwood forest. Having one right here close to town is wonderful, special, and very important. Renee Pasquinelli, senior environmental scientist with the area's California State Parks District, said she was glad the Save the Redwoods League and members like you protected the property. Big River Mendocino Old Growth Redwoods is a very important because it contains one of the very few remaining pockets of old growth redwoods on the Mendocino coast, she said. For more information, go to the webpage savetheredwoods.org. That's www.savetheredwoods.org. Cascadia Wild has halted huge public lands clear cutting just outside of Eugene. Public opposition and a legal challenge from Cascadia Wildlands and Oregon Wild has prompted the Eugene Bureau of Land Management to place a hold on its plans to clear-cut 259 acres of public lands just outside of Springfield, Oregon, near Shotgun Creek. The second show timber sale would have been the largest clear-cut on federal lands in Lane County in 20 years. This logging proposal elicited over 700 public comments, largely in opposition to the proposed clear-cutting. Local residents raised concerns about clean water, Chinook salmon, and logging, some of the last old forests in an already degraded watershed. Quote, I am extremely relieved that these mature trees may now have a chance to become a real old-growth forest. They are located very near the BLM Shotgun Park and Recreation Area, and I believe the BLM should focus on preserving our public lands for wildlife recreation and future generations, said Ellen Firstner, a Marcola resident who commented on the sale. Continuing her quote, protecting the old forest that is left should be our priority to fight global warming. It's just a shame our federal agencies do not see it that way. After the BLM's decision to move forward with logging, Cascadia Wildlands and Oregon Wild filed a protest with BLM, but BLM failed to pick up their mail at the post office and refused to consider the protest. Seneca Sawmill then purchased the sale, and Cascadia Wildlands and Oregon Wild was forced to file suit in federal court arguing that the BLM neglected to analyze the effects of clear-cutting in conjunction with ongoing commercial logging and road construction in the same area. BLM withdrew their decision to log the second show timber sale on March 19th before answering the complaint and before the court could rule on the merits of the case. Quote, our federal timberlands have been hammered by reckless clear-cut logging for the past 90 years. Salmon and spotted owl populations are plummeting. Water quality is terribly diminished, and our federal timberlands have more roads than Los Angeles, said Nick Cady, legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. Yet despite the science and public opposition, the BLM continues to target mature forests. The agency refuses to open its eyes, unquote. Decades of past clear-cutting has resulted in federal lands that are now overstocked with dense young Douglas fir plantations. Conservation groups have been working with the BLM for the past decade to meet timber targets by commercially thinning these younger forests. Quote, "The second show proposal is a big step backward," said Doug Hyken of Oregon Wild. Continuing to quote, "Restoration thinning has allowed the agency to meet its timber goals without clear-cutting and without doing undue harm to wildlife, habitat, and watersheds. Clear-cutting public land should be put in the dustbin of history where it belongs," unquote. The second show decision has been pulled, but the agency may again elect to proceed with the controversial logging after revising its analysis documents. The revision process will be open to the public, and the Bureau of Land Management will respond to public concerns and questions about the proposed logging. For more information, go to the webpage Cascadia Wild, that's CASCWild.org, www.cascwild.org. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife scientists have published a groundbreaking work on marijuana's effect on the environment. Environmental scientists with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife recently published a first-of-its-kind study that clearly shows that water used for growing marijuana has a devastating effect on fish in the state. The study showed that during drought conditions, water demand for marijuana cultivation exceeded stream flow in 3 of 4 studied watersheds. The resulting paper entitled, quote, "Impacts of Surface Water Diversions for Marijuana Cultivation on Aquatic Habitat in 4 Northwestern California Watersheds," unquote, concludes that diminished stream flow from this water-intensive activity is likely to have lethal to sublethal effects on state and federally listed salmon and steelhead trout and will cause further decline of sensitive amphibian species. The study was published online in the scientific journal PLOS-1. By using online tools to count marijuana plants and measure greenhouses and conducting inspections of marijuana cultivation sites with state wildlife officers and local law enforcement, California Department of Fish and Wildlife scientists quantified plant numbers and water use. Utilizing stream flow data provided by staff at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, CDFW determined water demand for cultivation could use more than 100% of stream flow during the summer dry season in 3 of 4 watersheds. Stream flow monitoring conducted by CDFW in the summer of 2014 appeared to verify these results. "All the streams we monitored in watersheds with large-scale marijuana cultivation went dry," said CDFW senior environmental scientist Scott Bauer, lead author of the research paper. "The only stream we monitored that didn't go dry contained no observed marijuana cultivation." California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Law Enforcement Division works closely with dozens of other state and federal agencies to eradicate illegal marijuana grows on public, tribal, and private lands, as well as protect the state's natural resources. This research paper demonstrates the importance of greater regulatory efforts by state agencies to prevent the extinction of imperiled fisheries resources, said CDFW Assistant Chief Brian Nasland. CFW's new watershed enforcement team was created with just that in mind. The Watershed Enforcement Team works with agency partners to protect public trust resources from the negative impacts of marijuana cultivation, which include both excessive water use and pollution. CDFW will continue to monitor the effects of water diversion for marijuana cultivation on stream flow throughout this coming summer. Marijuana cultivation is legal in California if growers have the proper CDFW lake and stream bed alteration permits. Responsible growers help conserve the state's natural resources and are less likely to be subject to enforcement actions. The Bureau of Land Management plan would cut sagebrush and firs to help sage grouse. The Chehalis and Salmon BLM offices are proposing to eradicate decadent sagebrush stands, reseed the desired understory plants, and cut encroaching fir trees on 250,000 acres of range and forest land in an effort to improve sage grouse habitat. But some say the plan could do more harm than good. In a scoping letter that went out last month, the Bureau of Land Management said it had identified areas where past actions had hurt sagebrush ecosystems by reducing the native herbaceous understory and plant diversity. Contributing factors include invasion by non-native grasses such as cheatgrass, historical grazing practices, and a lack of natural disturbance such as fire. In addition, the letter states, expansion of conifer stands has compromised the quality of sagebrush habitat in some areas. The agency proposes to treat 175,000 acres of rangeland and cut 75,000 acres of Doug fir, primarily in the Pashmira Roy and Big Lost River valleys, as well as in the Lemhi and East Fork salmon areas. Greg Mann, fire ecologist with the Bureau of Land Management's Idaho Falls District, said the project cost is still unknown. He said the agency anticipates that most of the money would come from federal funds intended for sage-grouse conservation. The government is facing a court-ordered deadline of September 30th for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to decide whether to place the bird on the endangered species list. Mann also said that based on comments already received in the scoping process, the area proposed for treatment could be reduced. But John Connolly, who recently retired after spending 30 years with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game as a sage-grouse researcher, said he can't find any indication that the proposed plan would help sage-grouse at all. In fact, he said there's little evidence that any habitat treatment projects have ever helped the species. He said the main goal should be to protect the high-quality habitat that's left, especially from wildfires. Connolly said the proposed project could harm sage-grouse if sagebrush is cut in breeding areas or in winter habitats where the grouse are totally dependent on sagebrush for food. He said the BLM's plan does not indicate what type of habitat would be involved, and areas proposed for treatment almost totally overlap the areas deemed core or important grouse habitat in the Idaho Governor's Alternative for sage-grouse conservation. That ought to raise some red flags, he said, if in fact they're trying to help sage-grouse. I don't think they're going about it in the right way. Connolly was one of 11 scientists, all but one with a Ph.D., who signed a March 12th letter to the Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, contending that federal agencies are not consistently using science to best protect sage-grouse. These guys just proved our point, he said, about the BLM's proposal. Katie Feit, former biodiversity director with Western Watersheds Project and now a board member of the recently formed organization in Haley called Wildlands Defense, went even further, contending that the proposed project would mainly benefit ranchers at the expense of both sage-grouse and pygmy rapids. Ranchers don't like woody vegetation. They'd rather see cowgrass, she said. The BLM is hijacking funds that are supposed to be for sage-grouse and using it for cattle forage projects. Feit said the BLM proposes to treat areas where she had repeatedly complained about damage from cattle grazing. She said exclosures there show the degradation of the sagebrush ecosystem continues to be caused by livestock. It's clear that you don't have to cut the sagebrush to improve the vegetation, you just have to get the cows off, she said. A lot of that country, you give it a few years' rest and it will make an amazing recovery. Feit said pockets of fir trees on hillsides may be reappearing after having been cut for mining timbers in the 19th century, rather than encroaching on what was historically a sagebrush-dominated ecosystem, as the BLM contends. She said fir forests provide cover for big game, especially in the winter. There's a myriad of benefits from having a variety of habitats in the area, she said. Connolly said that depending on ecological conditions and grazing patterns, livestock grazing can be compatible with good sage-grouse habitat. He said there's no data relating grazing to sage-grouse distribution, though a study underway at the University of Idaho is examining that issue. A lawsuit has been filed to protect rare Colorado-Utah wildflowers threatened by shale oil mining. Conservation groups have filed a lawsuit in federal court in Denver challenging the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's decision to deny Endangered Species Act protection to two imperiled wildflowers that live on the only oil shale formations in Colorado and Utah. Oil shale and tar sands mining and traditional oil and gas drilling threaten 100% of known White River beard tongue populations and over 85% of the known Grams beard tongue population. In August of 2013, the service proposed to provide Endangered Species Act protection to the wildflowers and nearly 76,000 acres of their essential habitat, recognizing the threat posed by mining and drilling. A year later, after lobbying by industry and its supporters, including the Utah School and Institutional Trust Lands Administration and Uinta County, The service reversed course and denied Endangered Species Act protections. The service based its decision on a 15-year-old conservation agreement negotiated behind closed doors with pro-industry stakeholders. Public records obtained by plaintiffs in the lawsuit show that the conservation agreement purposefully excluded wildflower habitat from protection to accommodate oil shale mining and drilling. SITLA's Associate Director and Chief Legal Counsel John Andrews described the agreement as follows. The basic concept is you've got a 15-year-old agreement that's going to buy for all of our miners the ability to strip mine and destroy any wildflowers that are located on those sites in exchange for some conservation on lands that wouldn't be disturbed anyway. In its proposal to list the species, the service recognized oil shale mining in the wildflower's habitat as one of the primary threats justifying the need for Endangered Species Act protection. The Fish and Wildlife Service found that development of just two planned oil shale projects in Utah by the Enefit and Redleaf corporations would have substantial impacts and would reduce the viability of the species. But the conservation agreement denies protections on private and state lands slated for oil shale development during the 15-year term of the agreement, including those owned or leased by Enefit and Redleaf. The conservation agreement is a giveaway to the fossil fuel industry, said Robin Cooley, an Earth Justice attorney representing the conservation groups. Although the Fish and Wildlife Service previously identified habitat that was essential to the survival of these wildflowers, the agency rolled over during negotiations and sacrificed more than 40% of this essential habitat, including lands in the oil shale industry plans to strip mine in the next 15 years. The Endangered Species Act requires the service to make decisions based on science, not politics, said Megan Mueller, senior biologist of Rocky Mountain Wild. The science here is clear. These wildflowers must be protected from strip mining and drilling. The Endangered Species Act has an incredible record of saving species, but it can only work if we use it. We've known for decades that these wildflowers need federal protections if they're going to survive, said Michael Saul, a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. It's shameful to see Fish and Wildlife Service forego that effective tool just for the profits of one industry. And for more information, go to the website biologicaldiversity.org. That's www.biologicaldiversity.org. And that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on a normal week. This week we are broadcasting from a secret location in the Pacific Northwest. You can hear a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on Free Radio, or you can tune in this weekend on Radio Free Edmonton, yegradio.blogspot.com, or you can tune in Monday evenings at 9:30 to KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, or you can tune your web browser to radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net, where you can listen to or download previous editions of the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is normally produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.